Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by Buckmore Park, the home of British karting, and the patrons of Missed Apex. Go to patreon.com/MissedApex to support us and get all our bonus content and vlogs. This episode is called Rick Dead Redemption. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
Yeah, good. I've been enjoying my weekend off, celebrating my 21st birthday and enjoying the Monaco Grand Prix.
You can now drink in America and drive an articulated lorry.
I don't know what an articulated lorry is, but I'll just take your word for it.
Big rig, big old truck, king of the road. You are a big fan of Monaco. You're one of these, you have to be there to kind of love it kind of guys. And you're always defending Monaco.
Well, I don't necessarily think you have to be there to enjoy it. I certainly think if you go, it will definitely make you appreciate it a heck of a lot more. But I've always loved watching Monaco. It's a real thrill.
Yeah, it looks rubbish on telly, though. We are an independent podcast supported by you, the listener. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or at work. We're also joined by race analyst Alex Jeansy Van Jean. How's it going, Alex?
It's going all good, Spanners. Happy to be back on and excited after a enthralling, tense, bitten all my nails off kind of race.
And another Alex. Alex Goldie Goldschmidt. How's it going, mate?
Hi, Spanners. Yeah, pretty good, mate. Thanks a lot. Good to be back on Missed Apex.
And we have a token Australian. We've brought him over as our chat room host, token Aussie chat room host, our video editor, Steve Amy. G'day, Steve.
Hi, folks. How are you going?
Bet you're happy.
Oh, yeah, I'm really happy. It was a great race.
We'll hear more from our panel later. If you want to join our live stream that Steve is here to look after, then go to YouTube, search for Missed Apex Podcast, and click the little bell, and you will get a notification every time we go live. Chris, was this the first introduction of the Hypersoft?
It wasn't what we were expecting at first, and then when it actually came out on track, it was what we were expecting.
Yeah, so a guy from Pirelli came on for an interview and said, the Hypersoft will easily do 77 laps. So everyone's there thinking, great, nice one, good job. A tyre specifically designed to help us with this modern era of wearing tyres, deliberately wearing tyres for strategy, and you've built a street circuit track tyre that is going to last the whole race. However, it didn't turn out like that, so a lot of confusion online about it. But in the end, I think the Hypersoft did what it was supposed to do, which was to be mega, mega, mega quick for a short amount of laps.
Yeah, and even that was, doing 15 laps around Monaco, which is a particularly low deg circuit, although the graining was quite bad. So can you imagine if we take it to a track like Sochi, where we've never really seen tire deg before, that might actually make that race interesting for once.
Yeah, of course, because in Sochi, Rosberg was calling them the magic tyres that could last for the entire course of the race, and there seems to be nowhere at all. So I wonder if the Hypersoft is more than just a step down. They have specifically done something to make a compound that will wear in the way we've come to expect on these low abrasion street circuits.
Well, it's two steps softer than the softest tyre from last year. So it has definitely gone more towards the quali tyre type of rubber.
Awesome. Okay, then. Let's talk a little bit about qualifying. Max Verstappen, Jeansy, in the heat of P3, when the guys are really getting ready to set their qualifying laps, he did something. It was identical to 2016, right?
Yeah, by the looks of it, completely. He got in and turned too early and clipped the inside apex, which is a wall, snapped the steering arm. And once you've snapped the steering arm, there's nothing you can do. There's a call for that. He was probably blindsided a little bit by Hülkenberg being in the middle of the track. But to be fair, the way the racing line works through there, you're flat out and you're sending yourself out towards the left-hand side before that corner anyway. So whether he should have backed out, I don't know, but he braked at the right kind of point, but it probably took his eye off the ball for a millisecond. But no, I it was just an error. He's just pushing too hard, and it's kind of become statutory for Max to have some form of incident in a session at a Grand Prix weekend this year.
Chris, is it something like six races in a row where Verstappen has had this kind of incident?
Yeah, I mean, there was the spin in Australia and the crash in qualifying in Bahrain with Lewis, and, you know, multiple other ones bringing you right up to the incident with Stroll in Barcelona via a collision with his teammate in Baku as well. So he's definitely not had an easy time of it this season. He was the only driver to actually have a crash this weekend that was because of driver error. Nobody else threw it into the barriers. There was obviously the Leclerc incident, but that was a brake failure. So he was really the only driver error incident of the whole weekend, which I think not only says a lot about Max, but it also says a lot about the quality of these cars and the current field as well.
Yeah, apologies to our Dutch listeners, but I think when you've had this amount of cumulative stress of these events happening time after time after time, you've got to start going, it's something in his headspace. It's something in his mentality. But with this particular incident, I think this is really similar to 2016, where he suddenly jumped from a Toro Rosso into a Red Bull that had tons of downforce, tons of grip, where he seemed to just get taken by surprise by how early he could take it. Could the Hypersofts have had a similar effect on him? And he thought, well, he can take it early. The other thing I'm thinking is, yes, if that was a qualifying lap and you had to unexpectedly go around that Renault, then you would definitely have justification for going for it. However, in P3, yes, you're still going for it, but you go, actually, this isn't life or death. This is not optimal. I'm just going to skip that little chicane in the second part of that corner and I'll try again the next lap.
I think even if he had a really smooth start to this season, there's no excuses like that at this level, and not when you're driving for a team like Red Bull as well. And he can't, you know, play the rookie status anymore. He's quite an experienced Grand Prix driver now and a multiple Grand Prix winner, you know. And so you throw on top the really difficult start to the season he's had, he's really running out of places to run.
Okay, let's hear from our buzzing Aussie in the corner. What's the chat room up to, Steve?
Well, at this stage, they're giving Max heaps of garbage, I can tell you. Evangelos Eterocklitos, I hope I got that right.
Good try.
Says, well, this time he can't use the "I was used to a crappy Toro Rosso and expected it to understeer" excuse. And Rory L214 says the Hypersofts were overhyped, and he's dead right about that. They were garbage.
All right, then. What are we going to move on to now, then, Chris? In fact, people may have noticed that we have an absence of Matt Trumpets, and we have become very used to Matt telling us where the race was won and lost. And in fact, recently, he's been doing some fantastic races in 60 seconds. Well, fear not, because we are going to find out where the race was won and lost, and we are going to hear from Matt right now.
Hey there, everybody. Matt Trumpets bringing you today's Race in 60 Seconds.
Wheels off at Williams! No, actually, the wheels just weren't attached at the three-minute warning. It's not an editorial comment. Sorotkin, penalty. Lights out! Hartley, contact. Grosjean, complaint. No crash, no crash, no crash. Verstappen, passes. Ericsson. Sorotkin pits, Stroll pits, Hamilton pits. No one pits. Vettel pits, Ricciardo pits, Raikkonen pits, Bottas pits. Hamilton talks tires. Hamilton talks tires. Tires, 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 tires. Ricciardo loses power. Vettel almost passes. Hamilton, told you so to the team. Hamilton tires, 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 tires. Verstappen pits. Alonso retires. Just from the race. Verstappen passes Sainz, sort of, kind of, almost, with a little bit of light cheating. Stroll pits. Boozy iced coffee. Eggs Benedict. Boozy iced coffee. Bottas might have made an attempt to look like passing. Boozy iced coffee. Crash! Leclerc out. Hartley out. Virtual safety car. Boozy iced coffee. No one pits. Virtual safety car in. No pass, no pass, no pass. Checkered flag, and Ricciardo wins. And that was today's race in 60 seconds.
Okay, okay. Guys, he's not here. Can we all make a pact that no one tells Matt how good those are? Okay? Let's just say that, yeah, it's fine. You know, try harder. I don't want to boost his ego, but that was a magnificent summary of the race. Hey, Goldie, for a lot of people, even though Ricciardo was dominant up front in qualifying, and even though the Red Bulls just looked to have that amazing pace, there was still a lot of people that were looking at this as Hamilton versus Vettel off the line.
It definitely was the case going into Zandvoort, but yeah, it is one of those tricky circuits where you've got to make it count at the right time, and the start would have been probably the best time for Vettel to go around the outside of Lewis, possibly, or go up the inside into the first corner. But it was difficult to see who was going to be in front of the first corner.
And Chris, it was pretty much line stern, wasn't it? They all behaved themselves disappointingly into Zandvoort turn one.
I mean, it's been amazing. They all got through so cleanly, and they've been clean all weekend, and I'm truly amazed. And I feel bad for telling my mate to stick a fiver on Lewis Hamilton to get second place, because I just assumed that, oh, he's on the cleaner side of the grid, so he will probably jump Seb at the start, and I feel bad because now he's lost money on that.
Well, actually, Hamilton didn't get a good start. Alex, we've been commentating. Sorry, I need to differentiate between the two Alexes, don't I? Jeansy, who's the more sort of Cockney geezer sounding one. Goldie's the more, oh yes, clipped English commentator style guy. Jeansy. Hamilton's not made the best starts this season, and he's cautious. Actually, Vettel got a clean run, sort of stuck his nose in, but a very typical Hamilton start.
I can't really name a time where Hamilton's actually ever really made an amazing start, apart from 2014 at Abu Dhabi, where it was like there was a lighter jet, a rocket jet put off the back of his car. But no, it was a normal start, to be fair. I was actually quite impressed that the professional racing drivers actually acted and behaved like professional racing drivers this weekend. They were all astonishing. It's part of the reason I enjoyed the race so much, was just because the standard was so high, except for Stroll.
Don't worry, we'll go there. We'll go there
all the time.
So here's the first thing you're wrong about, is that that's not a good thing. Like Verstappen, after binning it in P3 and not being able to qualify, he had one job in this race, which was to bring out a safety car to make things exciting, and he failed completely to do that.
I had him down for lap 54 to have a crash, I think, which would have spiced it up really, really nicely for strategy. But from a racing point of view, I quite like watching them all drive really well and really cleanly, because it does show that they all deserve to be out there at the highest level, higher than anybody else who sits in a racing seat. It was a phenomenal display of absolute professionals at their peak.
Yeah, but you know, no overtaking, no smashes, don't worry, we'll argue about that later. Chris, we thought then that perhaps this Hypersoft was going to last a long time, and what we were predicting was that the overcut would be king, as in tires would not heat up quickly on outlaps, so the car responding, pitting second, would have the opportunity to see that the car they're either racing against or chasing had come in, and they would get a chance to put in a fast in lap, if you like, and then overcut or increase the gap. Very surprising then that Mercedes decided to roll the dice so early on lap 12 with Hamilton.
It's interesting. I think, you know, whether the overcut or the undercut would or would not work depended on which car you looked at. And we had that odd scenario where a little bit of both was happening, because the Hypersoft for most was wearing, you know, a lot quicker than we expected. It was going further than what it was doing in practice, but that's because the track had rubbered in at that point. But then the Ultrasoft tire really, really struggled to get up to temperature. It just wasn't in that working window. Whereas if you went for the Supersofts, that was working quite nicely. For Red Bull, on the other hand, they were actually making that Hypersoft work quite well. So there was a real mix of the two going on there. And we saw, you know, for what was a one-stop race, there was actually a good mix of strategy in there.
But certainly you get the feeling that perhaps the Ferraris and Red Bulls might have stayed out longer had Hamilton not rolled the dice there. The last thing they wanted to do was let Hamilton get his tyres warmed up. So they responded quickly. But the one thing that struck me as well was, with Hamilton pitting in lap 12, suddenly he's vulnerable to the rain, which threatened to come in, and any kind of safety car would have completely nullified that tactic as well. So it's quite an aggressive move from Mercedes.
I think they had to. They had to roll the dice, really, because they knew they didn't have the pace, especially compared to Red Bull. Maybe they could have gotten the jump on the Ferrari, but once Seb had maintained that place at the start, they knew that really the strategy was their only option of jumping him. So I admire what they did there to really roll the dice and try and get Lewis ahead.
Yeah, because Goldie, I don't think, definitely Red Bull, they were so kind to their tyres. The only reason for them to react was to make sure that they got that overcut in and not let Hamilton warm up the tyres. But, you know, why were Red Bull so kind on their tyres?
I think with Ricciardo, you have to factor in, because he had clear air, everyone else behind was in a wake of some description
yes.
at some point during the race. So with the Hypersofts, they were going off a lot quicker than people were anticipating, especially Hamilton, who was complaining about them. But yeah, it was just the fact that Ricciardo's were just, you know, no turbulent wake behind the vehicle. And it just worked to his advantage, really.
I think it's an inherent part of that car as well, or at least certainly for this circuit, because in practice as well, you know, they were going really, really strong. They were still setting purple sectors when those tires were 10 laps old. So there is, you know, something about that car that it was in just inherently keeping them in good nick this weekend.
Yeah, good. And then the only kind of notable thing from those tactics, Chris, everyone kind of did what they were expecting to do, which is wait for someone to blink, then do the overcut. And in fact, I think Vettel put it in about a 7-second lead over Hamilton in the end. You know, everyone's used to the undercut now in F1, and they were like, is Hamilton going to cross the line? But I think we were expecting the overcut, so we knew it was going to be a big gap. And from about 2 seconds, it was about out to about 7 seconds, I think, after the first pit stop.
Yeah, definitely for that lead battle, it was the overcut that was working pretty well, because you sort of just the gap that was about, you know, 5 seconds covering the top three really spread out to about, you know, 10, 12 seconds after the pit stops.
Chat room, how's it going, Steve?
Fine. The chat room's having a bit of a McLaren meltdown, I suppose. Someone said the best chassis McLaren finished behind all the running Renaults and the Hondas. And then the comeback to that was people are past criticizing McLaren. They're the differently abled team that gets applause for just turning up. Although Williams are vying for that role, apparently.
I will say that people who are McLaren fans do indeed judge McLaren by different standards. And I think their publicity department may regret pushing so hard on the best chassis claim now that that is proving not to be true in this particular season. So, Chris, yeah, the only surprise was Bottas going to the Superstoffs. And that suddenly brought the tactical element of it to life. Because with Bottas on the Supersofts, suddenly we have a race on. There's a car in there that has made the call based on thinking, well, it's not going to be a one-stopper Hypersoft. Oh my God, why did they call so many of them something soft? Okay, Hypersoft. Everyone was thinking it was Hypersoft, Ultrasoft. So they're the softest and then the next softest. With Bottas going on to super softs, which is actually the hardest compound, that suddenly makes everyone go, oh, this might be a two-stopper.
It is ridiculous, the soft tyre names, isn't it? And the ultra soft and the hyper soft were so tough to differentiate on the TV. It was ridiculous. They need to change that for next year. Anyway, back to your question. I'm surprised more people weren't going for the super soft, because after Thursday, I got the impression that a lot of people were looking at that tyre as a better race tyre than the ultra soft, especially when we found out that the hyper soft was wearing a lot quicker than we expected. And the cooler conditions tend to work better for the super soft anyway. And Mercedes and Ferrari had those tyres available. Red Bull didn't. So I understand why they didn't go for the super soft. But Mercedes and Ferrari had that at their disposal when they didn't go for it, which surprised me, really, because it would have been a very comfortable one stop at that point as well. But I really don't think, you know, even if their tyres are completely falling away, two stops just not going to work.
All right, let's go to Steve now, because the next thing of note that happened, and this is Steve, this is not you in your chat capacity, this is us as media content creator friends, and you as just an Aussie, just a fan, looking at a racing driver, hoping that he'll win a race. When it came over the radio and he said, oh, I'm losing power, how did that feel? Did it feel bad? I think it felt bad.
It felt like the whole bottom just dropped out of the world. I was sitting there late at night in the dark by myself watching Daniel win the race. And then suddenly when he came over and said, I'm losing power, if there'd been a Frenchman next to me, I would have strangled him.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's a reasonable response in Australia. But tell you what, even in our I was hanging out in our Patreon Slack group. Why not support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/missedapex? And the guys in there that I know full well are Hamilton fans, are Vettel fans. Universally, when Ricciardo, and I'm going to say it however I want, Richie Icchiardo had that problem and said, I'm losing power. The amount of comments that were just, no, please, no, it can't be. It can't be. People were desperate for him to win this race. Like, what does he mean to you as an Australian driver, you know, kind of on the Webber scale?
I think he probably means more to us than Webber does, because he's got more potential. I think Mark, you know, was a good racer in his day, but he was never going to be world champion. I think Daniel has a real chance to be world champion, you know, in the next few years. And I think he's doing a lot of good for Formula One here. You know, lots of Australians now know who he is and follow the sport, at least. You know, they look out for the results every 2 weeks.
Good. And hello to all our Australian listeners. I think it's our third highest audience count, our third highest listener count behind the UK, the US, Canada. I think it's then Australia, then the Netherlands. So hello to you guys. Not that everyone else isn't important, but just less important to us. So yeah, go Ricciardo and go Verstappen. Alex, you're holding your head in your hands. You know, this is all calculated. Don't worry. It's not me saying this. It's the comedy character of Spanners Ready, host of Missed Apex podcast. But during the race, you were saying to me, even though Bottas has kind of set his stall out, he's doing a one-stopper, you always felt that the guys in the top five could not pit.
If they'd lost track position. So if all four, if the top of them all pitted, Bottas would have jumped them. And also the midfield was much, much faster in the sort of final two thirds of the race. So they were under threat. But to be fair, after I wrote that text message, I then looked at the gaps and realized that they were too far back. So, no, that wasn't quite right. But they all got very close towards the end. I mean, they were all on Bottas's tail in the going across the line. So it could have been a very interesting situation if people had pitted. But I think they'd had them covered just.
Yeah, so there was a lot of cat and mouse, Chris, about whether anyone was going to roll. I think the only people realistically who were ever going to pit was Hamilton and Vettel, because Ricciardo was up there with his track position. He wasn't going to give that up. Kimi Raikkonen is always just left out to see what happens, and Bottas was suited and booted to finish the race. But had one of those two championship contenders pitted, it could have been very interesting indeed.
I think they would have closed the gap and then just hit the brick wall that you see at Monaco. I mean, if say Ricciardo had pitted with his, you know, power deficit, I mean, the reason he was staying ahead was because he had track position to begin with. If he'd have pitted, he most definitely would have lost track position in the long run, even if everybody else had pitted as well. So yeah, I think one stop was definitely the way to go, even if they were, you know, lapping slower than the midfield for most of that race.
So at one point I actually thought if they had to pit, if these tyres were going to go away, it was between Daniel Ricciardo and Bottas. But Bottas was sat there playing the waiting game. And I think it was taken out of his hands in the end because everyone decided track position was king. And there was just one little blip left in the race, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. But on lap, I think it was 73, we found that Leclerc ended up having a bit of a brake failure, crashing into Brendan Hartley, which caused a safety car. And then we all kind of held our breath and went, is this going to be the moment? But in the exact opposite scenario to Bahrain, Chris, everyone went, oh, no. Track position is so the king here that even a fresh pair of boots with 4 seconds delta on the leaders wasn't enough. They had to stay out. And this really is, this is Monaco.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're so close to the end of the race as well, you know, rolling the dice like that, it really isn't worth the risk. And I think, you know, for Mercedes and Ferrari as well, they've got to think about the championship. And I know Vettel said that he sees Red Bull as title contenders, but I personally do not. Just because I think, you know, they can probably challenge for wins on a regular basis, but they're not going to be there across the whole season. So all Ferrari have to do is just make sure that they're ahead of Mercedes. Yeah. And Mercedes weren't expecting to be particularly quick here anyway. So actually, third place is pretty good for them. So they should just take that. And they did just take that.
Yeah. Par for Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton was third behind Vettel. Try telling Hamilton that. I think he wanted to go for second place. The team is sitting there thinking, no, this is kind of exactly where we expect it to be. Let's take just a 3-point hit in the championship lead. This is fine. Of course, Hamilton had different ideas. Let's imagine, though, for a second that Red Bull are title contenders. Daniel Ricciardo has been racing as well as he possibly could be in Red Bull this season. Jeansy, I put it to you that as good and as talented as Max Verstappen is, Daniel Ricciardo is now the team leader at Red Bull, if not contractually, by his performance and spiritually, and the whole team must be looking to him and thinking if there's a title championship up for grabs here, it's Daniel Ricciardo who's going to take us there.
In 2018, yes. Max Verstappen has all the talent, all the ability, all the potential. Unfortunately, his head is not there yet. If all of a sudden you put him in a car that's like the 2014 Mercedes against a lower teammate, he'll go off and win it. You put him against someone who is a seasoned veteran of the sport, a Vettel, a Hamilton, he won't beat them over a season. He'll do some amazing things and win in some fantastic races where he'll be superb, but he cannot seem to hold his head together for one whole season.
Yeah, and chat room, I'll be very interested to hear what you think about that, because if the tables do turn a little bit, if Red Bull suddenly start pulling out performance after performance and there's a World Driver Championship on the line, Max Verstappen's only got half the points of Daniel Ricciardo at this point. I think Red Bull do back the guy that's winning, the guy that's out in the lead of the championship. We could very well be seeing a strange situation where Max Verstappen is getting team orders. What would that be, Chris? What are their team numbers? Multi 370. What's Verstappen's number?
It's 3 and 33.
3 and 33. So
multi 333. Wait, what? Who do you want ahead? That it wouldn't work very well.
Four candles. Yeah.
I'd be surprised if they actually did properly enforce team orders. If it got to a later stage in the season and it looked like Daniel had a realistic shot at the title, yeah, probably. But I don't see Red Bull as title contenders for this year. They're not quick enough on enough circuits. Not through their own fault. I'll say a lot of that is maybe down to Renault.
Tag Heuer. Either way, I don't see them as season-long challengers.
Okay, so we know that Steve here, as an Australian, is a fan of the Australian racing driver Daniel Ricciardo. However, me and Alex, we are fans of Lewis Hamilton, the British racing driver. I think, Alex, we share a frustration today with Lewis Hamilton. Why is it that he seems to never be able to acknowledge that just because his tyres are not optimum and not fresh, that is somehow a disaster? The second he loses the optimum grip, he just wants rid of them. And then his poor engineer was sitting there telling him, no, everyone is in this situation. This is just what the race is right now. But we see it time after time after time. When Lewis Hamilton isn't winning, he is on there complaining about the tyres.
Do you remember when you were at school and you used to get in trouble for something and you used to say to your parents, but everybody else is doing it? And your parents used to say to you, I don't care what everyone else is doing, I care what you're doing. And that's exactly where Lewis is. He's like, all I can see is my world. I'm not looking outside my world. I'm looking at my tyres. They are graining. I've got to manage these tyres. I can't lock up because if I lock up, I'm in a wall and I don't want to crash. I know at the moment I can't catch the cars in front of me. All I can do is see myself going backwards. But I don't want to go backwards. I want to go forwards. And he just seems to completely lose track, which is the one big chink in Lewis's armor. And it's the one thing that he needs to... Well, I don't think he'll ever smoothen it out. It's who he is. But if he ever wants to not have these off races, he's got to get rid of that. I wish I could see a way around it, but it is really frustrating when all I hear is Lewis moaning about tyres when he's been told countless times everyone else is suffering the same problem. You've just got to get through it.
Yeah, also, I think we discussed it a couple of races ago where you say he's so used to being the best in karting, 4 times world champion. As soon as he's not winning, you're looking for something. It can't be me. I'm amazing. I've done all these amazing things. Therefore, the tyres are there and we've got to blame them. But have you noticed, Chris, that the Mercedes team are kind of putting their foot down a little more? I think in years gone past, he might have been able to persuade the team to change the strategy around that. Whereas I think they've kind of cottoned onto it now and gone, no, that's just what Lewis does in that situation. We need to lay down the strategic law.
I mean, at the end of the day, the guys in the garages are the ones with all the numbers and the ones with, you know, far superior knowledge of what else is going on in a race than just the driver in the car. And that's the case for everybody. So it's absolutely right that they're the ones calling the shots.
Alex, Jeansy Van Jean.
I think also in the not so distant past, the team have let him down on strategic calls. And maybe there's a little bit of him going, do you really believe what you're telling me? Is this really the right call? And he has to ask the question again and again just to cement it, make them maybe check the numbers again, just so they don't have a Monaco 2015, was it, where he lost out to Nico? And just to make sure, going, are you guys sure about this? Like when Vettel was told to park the car, and he said, are you sure?
Yeah.
And then he win the race? I can't remember what happened that race, but yeah. It's that kind of thing of doesn't 100% maybe trust the team.
Yeah, very interesting as well. But how I feel, Chris, is that we kind of end up thinking of these drivers as employees and as if, you know, they're just somebody who is, you know, paid to be there and is, you know, just doing what they're told, following orders. But in reality, these guys are team leaders. So, yes, they're young. Yes, they're in a team and an organization with a lot more experienced engineers and team bosses. But if you think of, like, you know, your army officer who's a 25-year-old commanding grizzled veterans, but he's there for a specific reason and specific training and specific skills that he has. Do you think people judge Lewis Hamilton too harshly when what he's doing is leading from the front in the cockpit?
I do think Lewis Hamilton is a very misunderstood person. I don't think many people in the world really understand Lewis Hamilton. But in regards to the kind of leadership thing, I don't really know. It's I can see why he'd want to assert himself at times, but I think it's right that, you know, he puts his trust in the team because they are the ones with the information, with the data.
All right, let's go to Steve Amy, looking after our internet chat room for us.
Well, at the moment, the chat room is still going on about Max and a bit about Stroll. Clint Eastwood says that Max's race form is linked to his moustache. Once he can grow a proper beard, he'll be able to deliver. And EMH2212 says Max probably suffers from a bit of short-termism. He doesn't think to the next few races, but really just thinks about the next few laps, and that doesn't help anybody anywhere.
Very good. All right, then. Alex Goldie Goldschmidt. Haven't heard from you for a while. Here's a question. Was Sebastian Vettel ever truly racing Daniel Ricciardo?
That is a difficult one. But firstly, you have to take into consideration the circuit itself. That's one of the key things. You know, he was getting, you know, I think it was less than a second towards the, you know, towards the tail end of the race, and especially after Daniel was having the problem with the hybrid system. It was like, okay, so when's he going to try and make these overtakes? You know, he's got limited opportunity to do so. Was he really racing him? Well, if Daniel had a fully working car under him, I think he would have been gone. So could you have said he might have been racing him? Well, if they were pretty comparable on pace, I would have thought so. But in this instance, because Daniel was doing such a great job with what he had, I don't think Seb might have been racing him.
See, there you go, Chris. I kind of tend to agree. I think Vettel had looked at Ricciardo and thought, he's not going to give that lead up. I'm reducing the deficit in the championship. I'll just follow this guy home. And that is what I think was happening.
I will 100% say that if Ricciardo had a working car, he would have scampered off into the distance, because the race pace they had on Thursday was just electric, and they were looking after the tyres so much better than anyone. They were really in the groove. But when you're missing the thick end of 200 brake horsepower, I think it was a realistic expectation that Vettel would be able to find a way past him. And I think what kept him ahead is obviously the nature of the circuit, but also the fact that Vettel was really struggling with the graining on the tyres. And so he couldn't even try and get closer to him in the corners, which the Red Bull was dominating anyway, especially in the last sector. Plus the fact that as soon as he got him out the window, so on his outlap and when the VSC ended, he just had no pace whatsoever, just could not get the tires in the window at all, and ended up losing 3, 4, 5 seconds in those scenarios. So I think at times, yes, he was racing him for the lead, but ultimately he wasn't the one with the pace.
It's interesting because Verstappen must be absolutely kicking himself. He must be sitting there going, wow, an ailing teammate, I'd have had a go.
I think the difficulty that Daniel Ricciardo had to face, though, because of the failure, was the fact that he had to move the brake bias so far forward. He said they move it sort of between 1 and 3% forward. He had to move the brake bias 7% further forward. Now, we remember at Monaco, where it's bumpy, where there's lots of undulation, it's really, really easy to lock a wheel up. So for Daniel to have that while trying to save temperature in brakes, which can cause all sorts of difference, like glazing and different sorts of things with the brakes, to control that race with the pace that he had, with a loss of, 160 horsepower, it's so impressive. I mean, the locking up thing is really important, because you've really got to nail the brakes in these cars. And one lock wheel, you saw it, Vettel nearly put it in the wall towards the end because he locked the wheel.
It was how he won his first race in Canada, wasn't it? When the Mercedes had the exact same issue. They lost the K, the brakes overheated, they couldn't keep it together.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Daniel was having to manage that exact same issue today. Plus, when you lose the K, that puts more stress on the combustion engine itself and increases fuel consumption. So with that lack of power and the fact that he was having to lift earlier, he, you know, wasn't even getting into seventh gear at the end of the tunnel. You know, he was getting high up in the range in sixth and then was having to lift off. Frankly, I think it's a miracle that he made the finish, let alone that Vettel didn't pass him.
I've just realized that I've forgotten what all these different systems mean and are called. What was wrong with Ricciardo's car?
So it was the MGUK.
So that is the one that harvests energy from the brakes and that.
Yes, and it deploys it as electrical energy. Basically the old KERR system, but much more advanced.
Right, so they've got about, what, 40 seconds per lap of deploying that?
Something like that, yeah.
33.
There you go. So that's not bad. So when he's coming out of the tunnel, he's kind of, you know, he's down on power, so he can still accelerate up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But where he would normally be going into 7, maybe 8, he hasn't had the power to get him up to the point where he needs that. So when he said, oh, I was down 2 gears, that's a bit misleading.
It was a bit, because I've even seen articles saying that he lost 2 gears in the race, whereas actually that was a kind of the wrong thing to say. It was just kind of a factually incorrect thing for him to say. I don't know whether that's because he actually wasn't fully, you know, enlightened on the situation. I think it's a bit unlikely. I think he maybe just misspoke, really.
All right. Oh, sorry, Goldie, do you want to get in before the chat room?
Well, there was quite an interesting radio transmission as well when Daniel was being told to shift using the lights rather than the tone that they actually have coming through the earpieces. So that was quite interesting how Red Bull were helping to micromanage the situation by saying, yeah, just shift by the lights, don't use the tone that's going in your ears.
I mean, it's really interesting as well, because Helmut Marko was being interviewed as they were walking and he was kind of like, I'm not going to tell you what the specific issue was, but it was quite telling that he said, well, we had the issue. We found a mode, a setting that helped the problem. And we also made some adjustments in driving style. So I think we could put that down to, okay, some fancy engine mode that helps them with that loss of power. Driving style can come down to where you gear shift. So using the lights, so kind of doing it by yourself, if you like, instead of by the tone in his earpiece. And then the other thing was, he was having to then, instead of going on the brakes early, he was lifting and coasting, but not to save fuel. I think he was lifting and coasting because he'd basically run out of grunt and gears down the straight. Therefore, I just put myself in a strategically good position, lift and coast into the corner.
He was having to lift and coast more than he normally would do anyway. Because of the extra stress that was being put on the combustion engine, it was using up more fuel. So he was having to save more than he normally would be.
Okay, let's go to the chat room. And then I think me and the panel are going to have a little bit of a disagreement. Steve, Amy, what's going on with the chat?
Well, at this stage, Hansink is saying that Vettel is really going for the points this year and the championship this year. He's just so calm, even when things aren't going his way, which is a bit different than he has been in the past, I've got to say. Ray Thompson says, is it me or is Sparkle's bookshelf actually getting worse?
It's worse.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Evangelos has said, Rick has the most censored, Ricciardo, has the most sensitive ABS system in the world, and that's his left foot, and he's dead right about that. And Mansink says, this is probably the only race in the year where you can win with such a damaged car.
I tell you what, yeah, that is definitely relevant to what we're about to talk about. And the Red Bull radio did try to make this out to be like equal to Schumacher winning a race with only fifth gear available. Daniel has done himself absolutely no harm in the legend status whatsoever. When this guy delivers, when he brings it in such style, and he's got the personality and the sound bites to bring with it, that I think even if he doesn't become a world champion, he is going to be remembered throughout the next few decades of Formula One. He's definitely been a great addition for Formula One and a good personality. But Steve, did you just pronounce it Ricciardo?
I can't remember. I normally pronounce it Ricardo because that's the way he does, but I have been told that it should actually be Ricciardo, I believe.
Yeah, and I've decided to call it Ricciardo because it generates emails, and I like getting your emails, so it's nice, you know? Why would I change? Ricciardo, who cares? Okay, so let's have a bit of a disagreement. I think race guy, Alex Van Gien, you're a race guy, aren't you? You do sim racing at the moment. You're big into your sim racing at the moment.
I am big into my sim racing at the moment because real racing isn't quite happening with new family and new job and lack of money because of kids and all that kind of stuff. So no, I've got...
You've got a little baby, haven't you? I mean, babies are terrible. Why did you do that?
Yeah, she's nearly 7 weeks old now.
Third one as well.
Oh, look, there's a cat on the window ledge.
This is your third kid as well.
This is my
it?
Second. No, my second.
All right.
My second and my last.
Okay, can I just say, make sure you get a Netflix account and
got one.
Like, yeah, good. Right, you know, just stick
Netflix,
to watching films.
Amazon Prime, Sky. I'm
yeah,
set for
exactly.
Life,
just watch TV. Put her down. Don't have any more. Babies are terrible. but you do a bit of sim racing, and you're going to be doing some tomorrow night. Is there like live commentary along with that? Is there?
Yeah. So I run a series called the Project 4 GT3 World Championship, which is run on Project Cars on the PlayStation 4. There's 16 of us that take part, mainly because that's the maximum number that you can have in a group. There'll be 14 tomorrow because two people can't make it. And we're racing at Brno in the Czech Republic. We run real assists, which has got the ABS and the traction control. We run real world weather, so we check the weather that's going on in that country at the time of the race, and the weather is set. But we will be live streaming the race tomorrow from 8 o'clock, which is when the lobby will open. Practice will start at 8:30, and that will be live streamed on Online Racing Network, which is a YouTube channel. I'll stick a link on the Missed Apex podcast sheet, but there's some really great people who are racing in it. You've got Chris Daines commentating on it, and apart from being a great racing driver, he's also a fantastic commentator as well. Might give you a run for your money, Goldie. And then you've got some great
I'll wait and see on that, Jeansy.
Watch it tomorrow.
Okay, I tell you what,
yeah,
you can join him.
I will do.
I tell you what, guys, make sure you follow at Missed Apex F1 on Twitter, and we will tweet out when Jeansy is going live. Okay, so
Just so you can all be aware, I won't be running at the front. I'll probably be fifth, sixth, because it's a blooming tough group of people. Danny Henning and Carl Powell will walk it, I think.
Yeah, good. I've seen you karting. It's fine. I had low expectations. So my biggest beef in this race, as a Lewis Hamilton fan, as a British Formula One fan, was I was dying for Lewis Hamilton to pit. He was cruising up to the back of the front two. He was complaining about his tyres. Now, we'd just seen Verstappen do his one stop onto the Hypersofts and suddenly be out 4 seconds a lap faster than the leaders. With 21 laps to go, I put it to you, Chris, that Hamilton should have pitted and he could have gone for the win.
No, you would have been 4 seconds a lap quicker, but then you would have just cruised up to the back of them and not passed them, because that's the way Monaco works. He would have given up two places and not been able to make them back up again.
Well, hang on a minute. Let's put that in context, because Esteban Ocon, previously in the race, had jumped out of the way of both Mercedes drivers. Fair enough, they were out of pit sequence, and Ocon may have felt he didn't want to compromise his lap time, or, more realistically, he may have his eye on a Mercedes seat in the next couple of years. Either way, he jumped out very, very quickly, and I have a huge suspicion that Ocon would have jumped out of Hamilton's way again. I think he would have been let by Bottas simply because Lauda had come on and said the main aim of our race strategy is to protect Lewis Hamilton's lead. So that would have put him behind Kimi Raikkonen with a big lap time delta.
Yeah, and he still wouldn't have passed him. Okay, even if they had told Bottas to get out of the way, you know, you're still losing one place and Raikkonen's not going to give that up, not least for the podium. What that was damage limitation. He was pretty much guaranteed third if he stayed out. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, we saw guys who were so, so much quicker, really, really struggling to pass. I mean, look at how Max spent so long looking at the back of Sainz. And when he passed him, he was 25 seconds up the road within four laps. That's how much quicker he was. And it was still a real struggle for him to get by. So, and when you've got so few laps remaining as well, it's not worth it. It's not what you can go to the end on a ridiculously old set of tires. Sebastian Vettel proved that to us in the first year of Pirelli high degradation tires, that you can just go to the end and hold your position.
So what you're telling me is in the jewel in the crown of Formula One, the Monaco Grand Prix, a driver with a 5 second a lap delta was struggling to get past a car. Now, to me, that says that this racetrack doesn't belong on the calendar. Now, I don't want to be a stick in the mud. I don't want to be negative because I enjoyed my 2 hours in front of the television, locked away in the shed, watching this Grand Prix. The worst Grand Prix in the world is better than 2 hours sitting with some screaming kids and the new kittens that are just peeing everywhere. However, in the context of Formula One, in the context of the season we've had, I didn't want to come on here and say it's a boring race because there was a magnificent story of Daniel Ricciardo winning this race. I didn't want to be a party pooper. However, we did put a poll out on my Twitter account, and thank you so much for the people who've been responding to all my polls recently. I have been accused occasionally of wording it in a little bit of a biased way. I think that is shocking. If you follow me at SpannersReady on Twitter, I think you'll find I'm always very neutral. In this case, I was neutral. I said, recording Missed Apex tonight, we're split on how good that race was, so please help us out. Was the Monaco Grand Prix a great race or a boring race? And we've had about 100 votes, and it is 46% great and 54% boring. So I don't feel too bad sitting here saying, I think that as a spectacle, without the story of Daniel Ricciardo winning, Chris, that was a boring race. Everyone finished where they started. There was no competitive overtakes. You could not race, even with a 4-5 second delta. There was no racing. This was not a Formula One race.
Well, it was. But here's the thing. You're saying that without the Ricciardo thing, it would have been boring. Yeah, but without the Ricciardo thing did happen. You can say a lot of things. If that didn't happen, this wouldn't have been an interesting race. The fact is, they did happen. And yeah, Monaco is all about qualifying. That's why it's a unique race, because it's so qualifying dependent. It's a lot of pressure on the Saturday. Yeah, it takes away from the action on the Sunday, but it's, you know, the one race of the year where this is truly the case. And that's part of the challenge of Monaco. And, you know, even when we go into it, there's always something, you know, it's very, very rare. I think last year's race was a bit of an exception where, really, you know, not a lot happens. There's no story to it. There's always something that does happen in the race to spice things up.
Gene Z.
Max started last. Where did he finish? Ninth. We saw some great moves. So you can't say you can't overtake around there. It's hard. It's really, really hard. But to give you an idea of how tense that race was, and it wasn't a barnstormer, a screamer like some of the races that we've had lately, but it was tense because you didn't know what was going to happen, and that's the beauty of Monaco. At Monaco, anything can happen and completely transform the race. Go on, you're going to say something and think you're right.
Counterpoint, it was only tense because we thought Daniel Ricciardo's car might fail at any minute. Had he just had that pace and we didn't know that there was something they were managing, which they did manage, it would have just been beads on a string.
It was tense because also we didn't know what was going to happen with the tyres. Because I think at one point you said to us that you put a bet on Bottas to win the race because he put super softs on, and we thought everybody was going to two-stop. That was had everybody on the edge of their seat thinking, when is someone going to pull the trigger? So I have no fingernails left because of today's race. That's the way it works for me. The reason I like Monaco as a racer, the reason I like Monaco is because it's such a challenge. You are coming into corners like Tabac at 150 miles an hour, where did you not see them coming into the swimming pool? They were inches from that barrier every single lap. You have any idea how difficult that is? You make one mistake, your entire race is over. In some drivers, in some of the new drivers, that could be career over.
Yeah, but sure,
because someone else might come in.
Alex, we could go and watch Hill Climb, where it's time trials that go out one at a time. They are so close to the barriers. It's incredible racing. Go watch John Monroe, who's been on this podcast, going and doing his hill climb stuff in single seaters. It's absolutely fantastic. But Chris, I mean, you can talk about that, but that kind of excitement, you see all that in practice, you see all that in qualifying. When it comes to the race, you want people to be competing against each other.
You get to enjoy it in the race as well. I mean, I seriously get such a buzz out of just watching them, you know, going around that track, because it's such a challenge, as Jeansy said. And you know, I mean, with the number of overtakes does just not equal good or bad racing at all, you know. And it's just become such an idea that Formula One, they're like, oh my god, we have to have overtakes, and it's just not the case. When some of the best football matches sometimes end up nil-nil. They're not always, you know, 5-5.
While that's true, that organically happened in the same environment as other football matches. This is more like having a football match where you say, don't run, and some of the players actually have their legs tied together, and we have goals that are a 15th of the size as normal. And that means that it is definitely going to be nil-nil unless you have some Liverpool-style goalkeeping. Too soon. Goldie. Ow. Goldie, back me up. It, apart from the drama of Ricardo, this wasn't a good race.
Nah. In some ways, I agree with you. But in terms of what Jeansy was alluding to, now this weekend actually is quite a specific one for me. And I'm talking nostalgia here. 1988 was the first time I watched a Formula One Grand Prix. And it just so happened to be when Ayrton Senna binned it on the approach into the tunnel. Since then, Monaco has always been a race I will watch every single year. But yeah, like you say, it can be difficult when there's no overtaking, but there is always something that happens at Monaco. Let's take, for instance, most recent Grand Prix that have happened there. Remember 2013 when Rosberg won it and you had that incident between Maldonado and Chilton bringing out the red flag? You then had the one that Vettel won back in 2011 when you had Sutil, Hamilton, Alguersuari and Petrov ending, I think it was by the swimming pool chicane. There is something magical about Monaco. Forget about all the glitz and the razzmatazz. There is always something that brings excitement. We had it with Danny Ric's issues with the MGUK this weekend. But for me, Monaco is one of those that should stay on there because of the nostalgia. Now, Spanners, I'm going factual on this one.
Okay.
Silverstone was not the only place that had its first that was on the first ever Grand Prix calendar in 1950. Monaco was also there as well.
Good. So what you've done is you've just listed a series of relatively mundane events. So let's talk about the most exciting things that have happened this decade in Monaco. Daniel Ricciardo's tyres not being ready due to an administrative error. Lewis Hamilton losing out to Nico Rosberg in a last minute kind of safety car, and then they couldn't get the pit stop sorted. They couldn't double stack them or something like that. The things we're talking about in Monaco is the equivalent to the end of Wild Things or just a Hollywood movie where, yes, they've been developing a long, pondering plot, and at the end they go, ha 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 ha, no, now something surprising and completely unexpected has happened. That is different to, you know, something like a well-structured story where you have a fight and a battle all throughout the actual course of the race. The only way Monaco is ever exciting is if something unexpected or terrible happens, like a mistake or a crash.
Okay, I have glanced in the chat room and seen a comment from Baja Mutio, Matt, that said, TBF, Spanish GP was worse than Monaco. And I agree.
Well, in that case, let's go to Steve Amy. What is going on in the chat room proper? Because Sparkles is nicking your job there. Feel free to reach over the internet and spark him out.
I will. I'll meet him one day and give him heaps. Don't worry. They're all talking about Monaco and the race. EMH2212 says the best part about Monaco, other than Ricciardo winning or Ricardo winning, whichever way you want to say it, was Verstappen climbing up through the pack. And that's true. Everyone says you can't overtake a Monaco, but he did overtake.
He overtook a lot of much slower cars. So yes, if you have like an 18 second delta, you can overtake. And I think the best policy with Ricciardo is to say it differently every single time. Please carry on.
I think I'm catching it from you. Mm-hmm. So Steve Bycroft says, Monaco plus F1 equals huge amounts of money. It's never going to go away as long as people get to see Seb spray all over a princess on the podium, which is pretty funny. And Low Stealth says, anything can happen in Monaco except racing.
That's fair. I think that's fair. Yes, you are sitting there waiting for the unexpected to happen. And to you kids out there who have only known Formula One since, say, 2000, in the 90s and the 80s, every race was like this. Every single race was like this. They would go, what would happen at the beginning? Okay, well, nothing. They all settled down. And you were waiting, basically, for Gerhard Berger's engine to blow up, just so the order would change in some way. Chris, Rainbow Sparkle Stevens, you haven't been on much lately because you've been doing real journalist things. Tell us about them.
Yeah, it's been an exciting time. You know, middle of the year, it's always very busy for motorsport. So doing a lot of Formula E stuff, which has been just really, really cool. And I was in Berlin last weekend, and that was just so much fun.
Wait a minute, you were in Berlin covering Formula E?
Yeah.
That's really grown up.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, there was Rome and Paris before that. I'm off to Zurich in a couple of weeks. And then maybe the New York finale if I can get the budget together. So it's a really exciting time with that. And, of course, 750 Motor Club stuff with Autosport and Motorsport News. So I should be getting back into that pretty quickly as well. And I'm still trying to keep in contact with everyone there because I feel like I'm really missing out. And it's all this really exciting race happened. And I want to know what happened in it. So it's a fun time.
It's tough. I'm suffering from the same thing as you. Obviously, I have a full-time engineering job as well. And this is bringing on more and more opportunities. And you have to end up saying to people, I need to actually put that on pause because of this opportunity. And it's very hard to know what you should be taking and which opportunities you should take. Speaking of which, Goldie, I mean, the opportunities I'm taking it is generally replacing you as often as possible on the commentary circuit.
Yes. Nice debut at Roy House at Daytona D-Max, my friend. And also good to, and the Daytona 24 Hours. And I have to say, I liked your tweet saying, 24-hour race with Jake Sanson. Don't think I'm going to get a word in.
And I barely did. Actually, no. Really
I know.
Good. Actually, I had
a
great back and forth with Jake Sanson because obviously he's been on this podcast a lot. And we basically brought a bit of podcast land to some motorsport commentary, which was lovely. What are you up to at the moment?
I've actually been doing quite a lot of stuff. I'm a series commentator for the Bambino Kart Club. And that hits its halfway point this coming weekend. So I'm heading down to Lyd on Saturday. I've just been up in Rochdale this weekend, funnily enough. One of my friends whose son actually races in the championship said, do I fancy doing some ring announcing? I went, I'll give it a shot. So I was up there last night at the Champions Hall in Rochdale. Thanks very much, Will Moore. So I did my first boxing ring announcing job.
Boxing? Fantastic. Where can people follow you online to get hold of all this stuff?
Alex underscore G1977.
Oh, that's God. Underscores are the worst. You and Chris are terrible. Let's go to the podium. Let's talk about winners, because winners don't use underscores or do drugs, kids. Let's talk about who wins the Thing of the Weekend award. Who looks ready and prepped for this? Chris Stevens does. Go on, Chris. Who is your Thing of the Weekend?
My Thing of the Weekend is Martin Brundle's yeehaw when Ricardo put in that 110.8 in Q3. That was so cool.
Of all the racing things, of all the magnificent racing things that happened in Monaco, which gives us such good and amazing racing, your Thing of the Weekend was a tiny piece of commentary.
It just made me smile a lot because it was a proper yeehaw moment, that.
Let's go to Jeansy. Jeansy, what was your Thing of the Weekend?
To be fair,
the entire F1 field except Stroll. They were all fantastic. Even with Max's crash on Saturday, they were all fantastic this weekend. I thought the performances were up there with some of the best I've seen for a really long time. I really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Ocon, Gasly, Alonso before he went out. Yeah. No, I mean, there was a lot to talk about. Obviously, I think the battle over the front and what we think of Monaco in general, because Monaco is such a juxtaposition to the previous races we've seen, has dominated this podcast, of course. Maybe we can get a Trumpets Time or something, or a new show next Sunday to cover a bit more of that. Goldie, what was your thing of the weekend?
Celebrating in style on the Red Bull Energy Station, Daniel Ricciardo's belly flop into the pool.
Yes, I saw that. Look, still, no one's really talking about racing apart from Jeansy, but I didn't mention that because that would invalidate my point. My thing of the weekend is Leclerc's save. Given that his brakes failed and he went all the way into the back of Hartley, did anybody else think that he used that barrier to slow himself down? I think he steered into the barrier and used the barrier to reduce the impact speed, Goldie.
But did anyone see his save going into Sandoval earlier on in the weekend? He was literally inches away from the wall. He had a full lockup. But yeah, that was... I have to give that guy credit. And plus, he knows those streets very well. He's only like 100 yards. He lives 100 yards off of the start-finish straight.
Well, I tell you what, like I know my village really well. I'd still be rubbish in it in a Formula One car.
Yeah, it was really impressive, actually, because you could see from the second that the brakes didn't work that he was like, I'm going to have a crash. How could I minimize it? And he put it at the barrier. He tried to miss Hartley, and unfortunately, he just wasn't going
there to. There wasn't room.
And he aimed to make sure he ended up down that slip road to cause as little disruption as possible. I'm really impressed with Leclerc. I think he's been phenomenal, and I'm not surprised that there's lots of conversations about him replacing Kimi. It won't happen because Ferrari don't like putting youngsters in.
I know.
But I like that he's being talked about highly by Seb and by Lewis.
Yeah, I think he's been really, really impressive, and I'm so happy to see Ericsson just being shown up properly this time, which makes me think that Leclerc is the real deal because that gap is big.
But Ericsson hasn't been terrible this season. Ericsson, I think, has been the best this year that he's ever been.
So?
And the fact that... So, I know from
that
your
is like
incredibly
saying,
high standards of Ericsson, it doesn't say much.
This is the least you've ever hit your microphone in a show, and you've hit it five times. So, Chris?
At the absolute worst, he is, what, the 18th best driver in the world, you know? That is... But, like... Why is that such a... There are only 20 Grand Prix drivers in the world, and so...
Okay, but Ericsson shouldn't be one of them. He's there for
yes,
weird reasons. No, and Stroll shouldn't be one of them. He's there for weird reasons. Stroll has been absolutely terrible all weekend. He's absolutely put a stamp on. Anybody who's defending Stroll now, they have been completely shown up and ridiculed by his performance and his radio calls. Not only that, Sirotkin, who we know really genuinely nothing about, who we also think about as a paid driver, is beating him now and has performed better than him in qualifying. Look at the qualifying results where we saw Leclerc and Sirotkin there in Q2 and their teammates falling away. Jeansy.
More than five times this weekend, I have said, get Stroll out of that car. I can't remember the last time I have ever said that about a Formula One driver, let alone five times in one weekend. I gave him such the benefit of the doubt his first season, and I was just so frustrated with him. I can't even actually put it into words how much I want him gone and Robert or De Resta in that seat. De Resta, the boring racing driver. I even want him back in the seat.
Now he's going for Formula E.
No, I agree. That was quite passionate. I like that. I approved. Steve, Amy, A, who do the chat room think is the thing of the weekend? And who do you think is the Daniel Ricciardo of the weekend? I mean, the thing of the weekend.
The thing of the weekend was Daniel's comment when his team said to him, we think you should. And he said, I got it, buddy. I think that's, and someone else in the chat room is, quite a few of them have sort of pointed to that as being the thing of the week for them.
Team leader.
Yes, I think that Max is going to have a problem, asserting himself for the rest of the year. Kedarnath Leah, I hope I got that right, says the thing of the week is Sergei Sorotkin qualifying 13th in a Williams, which is pretty amazing given where they ended up in the race itself. That was a good qualifying.
I agree. Williams had an absolute nightmare, yet he has somehow managed to look good out of that.
Well, that's fairly easy to do. I mean, his teammate is you-know-who, and even I could look good against him.
Oh, no! You missed the apex. Chris, who missed the apex for you?
Haas, 100%.
What happened to their upgrades?
They turn up in Spain, easily the fourth quickest car, and, 40 seconds clear of the rest of the midfield. Here, they've come here to Monaco, and the curbing is just shaking the bodywork to bits, and it's been just falling off in practice, so much so that, they just had to take it off. So they were basically running, older specs here, which, some people in the team are denying it's had a performance aspect. Other people in the team are saying it has had a performance aspect on it. I would very much be leaning on the latter, because if that's, genuine pace for them, that's kind of worrying, the fact that they can flip-flop, so much. But
bad.
Apparently for the next race in Canada, they've got slightly thicker carbon with more weaves on it to strengthen the bodywork. But that means it's heavier, so they might end up facing an issue there.
Wow, you said a lot of things there. Let's move to Jeansy. Jeansy, who missed the apex for you?
Charles Leclerc's brakes.
Oh,
yeah, I'm so gutted because I really like the kid, and I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. And just to have that happen, was it four laps from the end at your home Grand Prix?
It doesn't matter. It's Monaco. No one's really paying attention to the performance of individual drivers at Monaco. But it did give him the opportunity to show off that bit of skill and the awareness he had in that situation, in what must have been a very frightening situation. Alex Goldie-Goldschmidt, who missed the apex for you, buddy?
Williams for Sergei Sorokin, because they had a wheel nut problem that caused them to not have the wheels on within, I think it's 3 minutes before the start of the formation lap, which compromised what we could have seen from Sorokin, because he's manhandled that car all weekend long. We could have seen whether he might have even gotten into the lower echelon of the top 10, maybe.
Yeah, and it's annoying because I would have liked to have seen how far ahead he could have got of ahead of Stroll, but Stroll then kind of, I think he rear-ended someone and had a puncture, and then I think does anyone know how he got his second puncture? By that point, I kind of lost interest in Stroll.
Well, there was calls from Magnussen on the radio saying that there was some debris at Lowe's hairpin, so that would have compromised the left front wheel, because I think, didn't he have a left front puncture earlier on in the race?
Well, the first one he did, yeah, but I'm trying to figure out how he got the second one, and I just assumed it was his own tyre's way of sending him a message that he was just about done in Formula One. Missed the apex.
He might have hit the wall for all we know.
Steve, who missed the apex for you?
Well, I think I've got to reflect Raoul Waters' comment about who it was, and that's Max Verstappen. Not only, he's missed it the last 4 years. Max, he's missed it the last 4 years. The apex, that is, at Monaco. So,
well, I think the opposite of that, he's hit the apex much harder and closer than he should have done.
That's also true. He had a particularly, as someone said, an intimate relationship with the apex today.
Who missed the apex for you personally, Steve?
For me personally, Brendan Hartley, poor bastard. He really needs. Oh, sorry, I'll have to beat myself now. Poor fella. He really needs to get a lucky break somewhere.
Yep, you're going to have to beat yourself because you are the guy who sorts out our videos. And Steve, you've done an amazing job. You are a professional level editor. Like, it is your job to edit videos, and you are here putting together this Shed production. So I encourage everybody, even if you listen to the podcast, just go and check out what we do on YouTube. Search Missed Apex Podcast. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with what Steve and Felix have put together graphically and in terms of the video. Pony Awards. Anyone got a Pony Award? Hands up. Goldie.
Lewis Hamilton consistently asking about the tyres.
Yep. Hard to argue with that. So let's give it one of these.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Chris?
Lance Stroll, when his headset came loose and they say, okay, just keep going. He's like, I don't care. Just fix it.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Lance Stroll again, when I don't even know what he was being told, but he just went, what's the point in even racing? Yeah, what's the point in you racing?
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Guys, thank you very much for joining us on what was at least an intriguing Monaco Grand Prix. Make sure you follow me personally at Spanners Ready and the show at Mr. Apex F1. On Twitter. We also have a Facebook group, so search for Mr. Apex Podcast on Facebook. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Mr. Apex Podcast. That's actually the least we've run over on a race review for some time. So, like, some people like it. They're like, oh, brilliant, you know, more content because people are listening throughout the workdays. Other people are like, an hour and 20 minutes. Come on, guys.
You even said before the show, I think we're going to be bang on an hour.
Yeah, but this is what we always think. Like, the thing is, if there's not a lot happening, we go, oh, well, we can really explore and delve into a subject. Whereas if there's tons on, we sit there going, ah, drumbeat. We've got to get through it. On this occasion, it was the former.
Can I just say, I didn't plug my Twitter in the show, so...
It's got an underscore in it. No one cares.
It's C. Stevens underscore.
Exactly. No one cares.
No one cares. Really nice.
Mine is at Alex Van Gene, and I need more subscribers. Just click follow on me.
Jeansy just does dad tweets. Was it thing of the week?
Shut up.
Chris needs to clean his
okay
shelves.
And shut up. Okay. And now, as planned... Let's do our post-show comment of the week.
Comment of the week.
Steve, how have you found looking after the chat room for the second time?
Easier the second time. You kind of know what you're in for. So you're kind of half ready for it. You want to know who the comment of the week should be?
I was going to say, do it in like a Eurovision style. Now Australia's part of Eurovision. Go, here are the nominations for the Australian comment of the week. Jury, mate.
Mate, I've never watched Eurovision in my whole life. I wouldn't know what it's about. I've got better musical taste than that. Ooh, I'm going to be in trouble now. Okay, Matthew Graff is a contender for Comment of the Week, and he says that the YouTube feed should be in 3D to truly appreciate Spanner's hand gestures. And I think that's probably half all right.
I must be part Italian.
Well, yeah, quite possibly. Mark Greeno, I hope that's right, says, when I grow up, I want to be Prince Albert of Monaco. Yeah, I do too. That'd be a great place to live. Christopher Fonseca says, I believe Lance Stroll was born with the Silver Pony Award in his mouth, and we should send him a personalized Silver Pony Award. But I reckon that after Stroll's performance all week on the radio, that Ray Thompson gets Comment of the Week. And he says, can we please refer to Stroll fans as Stroll Trolls?
Yes, we can. Is that your winner?
That's the winner.
Comment of the Week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.